Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
If you've ever visited New York or Paris, Los Angeles or Florence, San Francisco or Washington, D.C., you've seen the problem. You can hardly miss it, the lack of sufficient livable housing in the great cities of the world. The problem of homelessness and housing insecurity consume the resources of many of the world's major cities. Homelessness undermines urban cultures, exacerbates social and health problems for those who are directly affected, and reduces the quality of life of city dwellers generally. Short of homelessness, many people experience the problem of home insecurity, in which they're forced by circumstances either to move frequently or when they can't maintain or repair their housing. Today's guest is here to talk to us about a non-governmental approach to housing insecurity. Efrat Alchil-Shor is a member of the board of an Israeli nonprofit organization, Tenufa Bakehila, which provides home repair and personal family advocacy to people living on the edge. Efrat is a developmental psychologist who leads a multidisciplinary team of clinical researchers. She's also a successful entrepreneur. Efrat brings all of her diverse skills and experiences to bear in her leadership of the nonprofit effort to relieve housing insecurity in Israel. Efrat Alchil-Shor, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Renee. It's a pleasure to be with you here today.
Although not exactly living on the streets, your clients are poor enough to have qualified for government programs that help them own their small apartments. Ironically, that puts them in a catch-22 situation. As homeowners, and I hope everyone can hear the air quotes in my voice, they're not eligible for government aid, but they're still too poor to afford even the most basic repairs. Their living conditions are desperate, often unsafe, unhealthy, and depressing. We want to hear how you help, Efrat, but first, tell us a little bit about the organization. First, what does its name mean?
Tenufa Bakehila in Hebrew means rising up in the community or raising the community. The idea behind the name and the purpose of the organization is to really help individuals in need get the start to raise themselves up and thereby raise up their communities along with them.
How long has it been operating, and how long have you been involved with the organization? And very importantly, how is it funded?
Okay, a few questions. I'll start with it has been operating formally since 2014 under the leadership of my dear friend and neighbor, Gabi Nachmani. The roots of the organization go back to Gabi's childhood. He lived in difficult circumstances after his father died, and he and his brother learned how to make home repairs out of necessity. Gabi has a huge heart, and he took his skills along with him along his life journey and helped improve the homes and lives of all the neighbors around him. And in 2014, the organization was formally recognized as a nonprofit organization by the government of Israel. And that's how they got started. Their funding right now is largely through the generosity of private donors, foundations, and private individuals. More and more, and I think this is really a very positive development, the local municipalities that the organization pairs with are recognizing the vital necessity of the organization's services and is offering to match, to partner, to provide support to the to the organization as they help serve the families in their local municipalities. When we started, it was completely the generosity of, you know, Gabi's relatives. And by now, the cities of Tel Aviv and the city of Jerusalem are both covering a much larger percentage of the expenses for repairs in their communities.
So I'm always impressed and moved by one individual who has had an experience and turns that into help for other people. It's a wonderful story. And you have a story yourself. You're a pretty busy person. You and your husband have an active family and serious professional responsibilities. What keeps you personally involved with this issue and this organization?
So I was originally motivated by Gabi's energy and Gabi's enthusiasm and his no-nonsense altruism. On a larger level, though, I am influenced by being a new immigrant to Israel. I'm not so new anymore. I've been here for 18 years. I'm still an immigrant, though. And when you look at the data on poverty in Israel, the National Insurance Institute published data in 2021 saying that 21% of the Israeli population lives in poverty. And more startlingly, children living in poverty in Israel number 28%. And as a person living a comfortable life and trying to be a part of the Israeli society and perhaps make the Israeli society a little better place, my participation in Tnufa Bakihila feels like something that's so important, I can't give it up no matter how busy I get. I'm not the best attender of meetings, I must confess, and I don't want to give wrong impressions, but I've been involved on the board of the organization since the beginning, and I won't give it up, please God, because the work they do is just so, so important.
So tell us about the typical client. What is that person or that family's situation?
That's such a good question. And it's sort of, you're going to find it hard to believe. The families or individuals that we serve are often elderly people who are very often Holocaust survivors who don't have any family network at all. They're alone in the world. We take care of families where often there's a multi-generational component. There's a grandmother living with parents and children, or quite often families led by single mothers. In those situations, what happens is that the local municipality welfare department gives a call to Tnufa Bakihila all of our clients are referred by the local welfare municipality social workers. They'll give a call and say that there's a family or an individual living with housing poverty, having homes in state of disrepair and disarray. And they ask our organization to come visit the family and get involved and help them out.
So they can be people who are have any sort of disability, a social disability, an economic, well, they all have economic disabilities because otherwise they would buy the service, or maybe not. Do you deal with mentally and physically disabled people who are not elderly or people
definitely.
Who have an illness? You do.
Right. Let me explain.
Yes.
We deal with lots of people with disabilities, both physical and psychological. All the families are in financial need, and it's been our experience that between 25 and 30% of the families or households we serve have much more complex problems than their poverty. There are some people who are just poor. There's no dysfunction. They're often Holocaust survivors with no support. We arrange, we take care of their housing repairs. We can arrange for food deliveries or rides to medical treatment, but often the repairs are just needed and they need help. In quite a few of the cases, the difficulties that the families or individuals are dealing with are much more widespread.
Efra, tell me about what happens after the urgent, immediate need is taken care of, if the broken window is fixed, and then the repair person sees all of the many things that need attention. Will a Tanufa Bakihila do things like replace a refrigerator or a stove, or is that too much? Is that beyond repair?
So the organization does its best to leave the situation in as good a condition as possible. So often when we'll do a repair of a kitchen, we will work with other organizations if necessary and leave them with working appliances. We get back in touch with the social worker from the municipality and update them on what we've done to try to coordinate as best possible with all of the important players in the situation. And the family keeps our phone number and they can call us back at any time.
You know, I mentioned this forthcoming conversation to a friend of mine who has a disability, and she's in her late 70s, I guess. And she said, I wish there was an organization like this that was for profit. I would be happy to pay for somebody to just come and address all those needs. Have you ever thought of doing that?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. As I said, all of our referrals come from the welfare social workers. And so usually the families we take care of are families who can't figure out how to get their needs met without the support of other people. But I will pass along the suggestion.
Yeah. Well, now you said you have 26, I think, full-time home repair specialists, and you have a social worker. Do you use volunteers for anything?
So it's so interesting that you asked. When we got started, we used volunteers to a large extent. Tourists and students and soldiers would all come and volunteer for us. However, as we grew, last year in 2022, we repaired 602 apartments in 20 different cities. As we've been growing, we found that we need a professional team to be able to keep working at the intensity that the needs are requiring. We have teams of three handy people who work together, they go all around Israel. Right now, we're serving 20 cities, and we're able to repair between 25 and 30 homes a month. We're on target to repair 700 different homes in 2023. The idea of volunteers, though, is so interesting because professional volunteers have been a huge resource to us. Specialty work people such as tilers, roofers, plumbers, and certified electricians. We do not have a certified electrician on our staff. These good people often call us. We had a situation in the Mea Shearim area of Jerusalem. We were called to the home of a person with an electrical circuit board from the Ottoman era. It was both not functioning and dangerous. And we bought the hardware to replace it, and a volunteer certified electrician did the work. In a really interesting situation, we had a family who called and their roof was made of asbestos, which is a dangerous material. We're not licensed. We have no experience to deal with it. And we got a call from a professional who said that he was licensed by the Ministry of Health to deal with asbestos contamination, and he did the repair at no charge. So they say it takes a village, and we really feel that many different Israelis just come to our aid, either answer the call, sometimes over social media, we'll ask for the help in an area where we can't do the work. But often these good people even call us.
Well, that's really wonderful because that extends your reach quite dramatically. And housing, as anyone who's ever had a flooded basement or heat that went off at an unhappy time, as anyone knows, housing and the state of your environment impacts your health a lot. In my view, it's a reciprocal relationship with housing having impact on health and health impacting your ability to maintain your housing. So tell us an experience that you've had with this kind of reciprocal relationship, if you've had it. Tell us one of your success stories about how doing some repairs or changes in a person's environment really had an impact on their health.
So it's a huge, huge issue. And we find that our involvement with the families and our repairs have a huge impact on their physical and emotional health. When we've entered the homes of families, we've had situations, we found situations where the mold in the bedrooms was so severe that the children were coughing and couldn't sleep at night because they're coughing so badly. We made the repairs and now the children can sleep through the night. We've had other situations where families live in such difficult and sort of demoralizing physical conditions that it causes severe depression, feelings of panic or aggression toward other family members or outside to others, and a deep sense of embarrassment. They'll never want to invite someone home. You'll have children in school who could never invite their friends over to have a play date after school because their home is in such grave disrepair. So we've seen situations where we've made a very significant improvements to the home, often replacing the kitchen, redoing the paint in the bedrooms, and improving the bathrooms. And the face of the family changes. The children feel a different sense of stability and security. The adults in the home feel a weight is lifted off of them, and they're much more able to go deal with the many problems that they still have, but they feel ready to deal with it. They feel a huge boost that someone cares about them, that people still care. There's caring in the world. And then they can go try and deal with the problems that they need to deal with, often physical health and employment and family relationships.
And is one of the things that I imagine that you are asked to do is to help make an apartment or a house, a residence, more accessible, either wheelchair accessible or safer for an older adult or a disabled person to get in and out. A broken handrail or even a broken elevator in a building is an inconvenience to a younger, healthier person, but it can make a difference between being completely socially isolated or having a life to a disabled or elderly person. Do you have a lot of experience with that? Is that something that your group is asked to do?
Yes, we've definitely had situations like that. A significant portion of the families and individuals we serve are elderly or disabled people. We can often make significant improvements. Interestingly, often in partnership with the local municipalities we cooperate with. There was one situation, I think it was in Lod, where there was an elderly person who needed a path paved to his front door since he could no longer manage the steps. The local municipality provided the tractor and the dumpster, and we did the work. In another situation, here this individual had emotional problems. It was a hoarder, and their home was absolutely not livable. The local municipality provided a crane for us to remove all of the soiled material in the house. And then we're able to empty it and repair it and restore this elderly individual's home conditions to something that was safe and comfortable.
And that was a challenge, I'm sure, for the social worker to get the client to agree to eliminate his or her things.
Often people we encounter people, elderly individuals or families, when they can't avoid the problems anymore. It's so bad. In the case of that hoarder, it was the neighbors who had called the authorities because the house just had a horrible stench. We do find, though, so interestingly, that our involvement in the home really opens up some things. So as I mentioned earlier, we work in coordination with the social workers of the local municipalities. We'll come back and tell them what we understand the issues are and what our plan of action is. And often the social worker will tell us, oh, I never heard about that. There's something about the connection. I think there's something about the families appreciating someone doing something just out of the goodness of their heart, just because they want to help other people. We aren't a government organization whose job it is to take care of the weaker parts of society. We're just good people who want to help. And that really has an impact on the people we encounter, and often they feel safe to share with us how difficult things are, embarrassing or like uncomfortable situations that have arisen, because they feel a certain feeling of safety with our teams and our social worker.
I can see how that would be the case. Also, because when you come, you provide practical help. Something is broken and you don't need to ask too many questions. You just go ahead and fix it. And that gives you credibility to go on to the next step. You're not asking them their questions about their life. You're just saying, okay, this needs to be repaired and we can do that. So here it is. And every client, regardless of their background, can understand and appreciate that. Finally, affordable housing is a challenge in many, many, many countries. In some places, the lack of it is just appalling. What would you like to see improved in Israeli housing policy?
So I did a little research about this in preparation for this conversation, Renee. I'm originally from the United States, and my picture of poverty is people on the streets. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, and the situation there is difficult. In Israel, the percentage of people living in on the streets in absolute homelessness is much lower. They're almost always people with mental illness and addictions, and things just became too complicated. But it's quite rare. We have a lot of people we meet every single day at Tnufa Bakihila who live in a home. They have an apartment, they either own it or they're renting it, and they lose control. They can't take care of the repairs, usually, almost always, due to financial difficulty, and then other issues that complicate things, perhaps disability, perhaps family dynamics, or other complications in their lives. And what we would love to see is two things, I guess. We'd love to have more resources to be able to serve more communities. We have four or five municipalities contacting us at any given time, asking us to come and serve their communities. There's no other organization, governmental or non-governmental, who does what we do, who fights housing poverty in Israel. And the local municipalities hear about the transformations that we're able to make in other communities, and they're calling and begging us. If we had the funds, we would serve every community we possibly could and reach every family or household that we possibly could. And we'd love to reach our goal, which is to eliminate housing poverty in Israel.
Well, more power to you and to Tnufa Bakihila with your very important work. I hope you will be able to grow, and I hope communities who hear our conversation will consider replicating the model. Thanks so much for talking with me about it today, Efrat.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for your interest in our good work, and thank you for having me.
And thanks to our researcher, Bela Pasikov.